Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's election special. Every Wednesday through Election Day on November 6th, we are hosting a special second hour of Your Call at 11 a.m., focusing on California's crucial races, propositions, and regional measures. Today, we are discussing Proposition 3, an $8.9 billion water bond measure called the California Water Infrastructure and Watershed Conservation Bond Initiative. According to Ballotpedia, California's fiscal analyst says the bond would generate about $8.4 billion in interest over a 40-year period, meaning it could cost the state about $17 billion. A yes vote on Prop 3 would authorize $8.9 billion, almost $8.9 billion, in general obligation bonds for water infrastructure, groundwater supplies and storage, surface water storage and dam repairs, watershed and fisheries improvements, and habitat protection and restoration. Environmental groups like the California Wildlife Foundation and Ducks Unlimited, who have given close to $1 million to the campaign, say they support Prop 3 because of promises to restore wildlife habitats. Today, we are joined by Angela Mosco, the Oaks Information Manager at the California Wildlife Foundation. They support Prop 3. And Angela Mosco joins us in studio. Hi, Angela. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning. My pleasure.
Nice to have you. The Sierra Club, one of the major opponents, argues that Proposition 3 could be used to fund dam projects that are harmful to the environment. The Sierra Club also says Prop 3 will give too much money to rich corporate interests like corporate agriculture businesses. Kyle Jones is policy advocate for the Sierra Club California. They oppose Prop 3, and Kyle joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Kyle. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And Dan Moraine is a columnist with Cal Matters, a nonpartisan journalism venture committed to explaining how California's state capital works. Dan is former editorial page editor and political affairs columnist with the Sacramento Bee, and he joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Happy to be here.
And I should also say, Dan, thank you for writing about Prop 3, because it's hard to find information on this one. So, Dan, let's start off with you. Water is so critical to the state of California for so many reasons. Prop 3 is asking voters to approve an almost $8.9 billion bond for water projects. California voters approved a $4 billion bond back in June to pay for improvements at parks and for water projects. And another water bond passed in 2014. That was a $7.5 billion bond. So, Dan, how do these water bonds differ from each other?
Well, this bond is coming from outside. The others were measures that were placed on the ballot by the legislature, the governor. This is proposed by a longtime water expert Gerald Merrill, and he has promoted other initiatives in the past. This is a pretty ambitious measure, and so the difference here is that it's really not generated by out of the Capitol. It's coming from the outside.
So tell us more about exactly how this ended up on the ballot.
Well. So Mr. Merrill, very smart, savvy guy, knows how to write initiatives. He's written several in the past, and this is, like many initiatives, it's kind of a Christmas tree. It's got something for a lot of different interests, and so those are the interests that are primarily funding this. So if you're an environmentalist who cares about a particular piece of the Delta or the San Joaquin Valley, there might be something in here for you, and you would then help pay to get it on the ballot and help run the campaign. One of the big features of this initiative is the repair to the Fryant-Kern Canal, which runs from outside Fresno down into Kern County, and it's a big canal, it's also suffering from subsidence. It's got some problems that needs to be reconstructed. So this has money in it to help restore, repair that canal, $750 million. And so farmers down in the San Joaquin Valley, who presumably would care a lot about the Fryant Kern Canal, are helping to fund it. It's kind of how it's one way these sorts of initiatives work. Now, not everything has a donor behind it. There's, you know, $150 million in it for restoration of the LA River. I'm not sure that there are any particular moneyed interests who are adamantly interested in repairing the LA River. Certainly environmentalists are. Certainly people who live in Los Angeles want to see that river become as natural as can be so long as it doesn't flood as it used to a century ago.
That is Dan Moraine. He's a columnist with CalMatters, and he wrote a piece, What an $8.9 Billion Water Bond Would Buy. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Angela Mosco is Oaks Information Manager at the California Wildlife Foundation, and they support Proposition 3. Angela, tell us why you support this bond.
The main reason we're supporting the bond is because of the funding for specifically Oaks, and also for riparian corridors. There's $50 million in the bond for oak woodlands and oak forested lands, and there's $1 million in the bond for riparian corridors.
Repairing corridors?
Yes.
Can you be more specific? What does that mean exactly?
So it's funding to restore or conserve lands along waterways.
Okay.
And there's a connection between water quality and our natural environment. So that's what brings us to the table for this big tent proposal. And like KLW, which is doing a fund drive now and reliant on its donors to step up and fund the important work that KLW is doing, the water infrastructure of our state is very costly. And unfortunately, not everybody in the state can turn on their tap and be sure that they're going to have water. And
So this would affect that.
Yes.
Drinking water.
There is money in the bond for drinking water. There's money in the bond for the environment. So it's a big tent, but there are a lot of good attributes of this tent.
It's a big tent, and it's a lot of money, almost $9 billion. When we have these bonds, specifically, let's obviously talk about this one, who makes the decisions about how the money is spent? You know, who will get the contracts, for example, to do this restoration and this cleanup? And who keeps track of it to make sure that it's being spent the way it should be?
So it's all specified in the measure. So anybody who has the time to read the 50-plus pages can read through it. But the funds go to state agencies that then provide the funding. And much of it requires matching funding, so it's leveraging those dollars, maximizing what is actually resulting from the funding. There are provisions in the measure for disadvantaged communities, lower-income communities, that don't require the matching funds. There are also priorities given to funding for disadvantaged communities. Ultimately, the legislature is able to call for an audit if there is a question about how funds are being dispersed.
And can you tell us specifically how would this money be distributed to low-income communities? What would it be used for?
For water repairs, primarily for drinking water supply.
Angela Mosco is Oaks Information Manager at the California Wildlife Foundation, and they support Proposition 3, an $8.9 billion water bond measure. Kyle Jones is Policy Advocate for the Sierra Club California, and they oppose Proposition 3. Kyle, why does the Sierra Club oppose Prop 3?
I wanted to start by saying that we don't oppose everything in Prop 3, and I think Angela mentioned some great pieces in there that do help the environment and drinking water. Those are things we look for solutions for, but unfortunately Prop 3 just doesn't, there's too much bad to take with the good. As Mr. Moraine mentioned, this was written kind of behind the scenes, and we have a sort of pay-to-play approach to this. And that doesn't work with good governance and the ability for the public to be involved, and that's something that the club is advocates for on all levels. Items were added to this bond to attract investors and those who can help fund the campaign, and it is a Christmas tree, and to take that metaphor even further, Merrill might be Santa in this instance, it's California taxpayers who are the elves working behind the scenes. As mentioned, this is going to be a $17 billion hit to the general fund, which, if you average it out over the 40-year period, that's almost, they're about $430 million annually. And so that means during the regular budget process, if and when we face a recession, that's going to be that much less money within the natural resources budget for the legislature to use, meaning that, we could be funding these environmental benefits now, but that could come at the expense of other programs in the future. Angela did mention that there is, the ability for the legislature to call an audit, but there's no legislative ability to amend any provisions of the bond, nor is there the ability for the legislature to withhold funding. This Prop 3 has been continuously appropriated, meaning that funding is going without having to go through the legislature every year through the budget process. In contrast, Prop 1 in 2014, most of the items in that bond went through the legislature, meaning that every year the heads of those agencies came in and had to give updates to the legislature on what's happening. And that process allows for, if issues are happening, to the legislature to be proactive about it. Here, the only ability for the legislature to impact any programs would be to have an oversight hearing, but they wouldn't be able to actually change anything. So there isn't any real oversight or ability to fix any problems.
Let me just ask you, Kyle, because you're bringing up a lot of points there. First off, can you elaborate when you say this takes a pay-to-play approach? Can you elaborate on that?
The people, the interests that participated in writing the bond are those who are funding the measure, and they receive a disproportionate amount of the bond's benefits. I think that a good example would be that, the agricultural folks who will benefit from France, those interests are spending a lot of money to get in this bond or to support this bond based on the amount of money that they're going to get directly to repair that canal.
Okay, so let's talk about that specifically. Angela, what about this argument that this is a pay-to-play approach and Prop 3 will give away too much money to corporate interests like Big Ag, for example?
If you take a look at what's actually being funded, and one of the benefits and curses of being a California voter is our initiative process is very complex, and it's very difficult to sort through what we're voting for. And I have to give a shout out to KALW for doing these radio shows leading up to the election to help bring some light to the process. So from our organization's point of view, the investments that are being made by this bond are reflective of many voices that have gone into the process of crafting it. And some have been donors to the process, others have not. But there's no funding for new dams. There is funding to repair dams. There's funding to take a dam down. There's no funding for the Delta Conveyance or the Delta Tunnel Project. So this is funding that will keep California running and that recognizes that our natural infrastructure is what our water infrastructure is dependent upon.
Dan, what does your reporting tell you? Because the Sierra Club, one of their big reasons for opposing Prop 3 is they say it'll give too much money away to corporate interests.
Well, There is a concern. I think it's a concern that the Sierra Club shares, that at least some of this money could be used to construct dams. Well, dams can be problematic as it relates to the environment. So now, Mr. Merrill, Jerry Merrill, says there is no money in this for dams. Certainly no. I mean, I've read the initiative. I can't find any language in the initiative that says we're going to, you know, earmark X amount of money for, say, the Temperance Flat Dam outside Fresno. But there is a concern that this would help pave the way for a dam. So, you know, that's one of the issues.
Well, Dan, let me ask.
It is the nature of initiatives. We put these things on the ballot. People sign petitions to qualify these measures, and you know, unless you're the person who actually put pen to paper, not always then, you're not sure exactly what these measures will and won't do. They are very complicated. They are not written for you and me to particularly understand all the nuance.
Well, Angela says, "Oh, a dam will not be built." And this is a dam is a massive undertaking. You would think that in an initiative like this, it would be clear. But you're saying it's not, Dan?
Well, I don't. You know, again, I've read the initiative. There's no language in this measure anywhere that says that earmarks any money for a dam. I think if you ask our participant from the Sierra Club whether there is a concern that some of this money could indirectly be used for dam construction, I think the answer might be yes. But, you know, I'm not going to speak for him. Be that as it may, clearly, you know, when you look at who funds it, the money is coming. A significant amount of money comes from environmentalists who see, you know, true benefit to cleaning up water, to doing the environmental restoration that clearly would be funded by this initiative. And there are a lot of farmers who see benefit to this measure as well. Dairy interests, growers of pistachios and almonds and other crops that you and I, benefit from, are helping to fund this as well.
Kyle, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, Dan just said there's no language in this bill, Proposition 3, about dams.
So there is, in two sections of the bond, there's a prohibition on funding for dams. And the legal inference of that is that if it's prohibited in these two sections, it's all good in the other sections. And because some of the language is not properly bounded by prohibitions on new dams, they could receive some of these funds. For example, there's funding in the bond, $675 million for projects that help implement sustainable groundwater management. One of the arguments that supporters for the Temperance Flat Dam have been using is that it is for sustainable groundwater management. So it's not legally prohibited for funding to go potentially towards that dam. Additionally, some of the Friant money could be used because the money in the bond is much, much more than what the project needs for repairs, could be used to increase canal and carrying capacity across the valley, which could make dams like Temperance Flat more financially attractive to customers across the entire valley.
Angela?
We're all minding our P's and Q's here. There's specific language in the measure saying that dams cannot be raised, as in made larger. So it's quite specific. The devil is in these details. I turned from part of my moral compass to Peter Moyle, who's one of the preeminent fishery scientists in the state, who's in support of this measure, and he's probably less focused on the dams than on the watershed impacts. But from my reading, dams are prohibited, and part of that is because this is interplaying with Proposition 1, which is a measure that is currently funded, which does have funding for dams. The groundwater elements of this measure are super important. Mm. In 2015, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, known as SGMA in water lingo, was enacted, and that's the first legislation in California's history that focused on management of groundwater. And there are interactions between groundwater and surface water. And it's very important that we get our groundwater into compliance. The reason the Fryant-Kern Canal is having the problems it's having is because of the great subsidence in the Central Valley, which you can see from satellite images.
Right, the ground basically sinking.
We've
done a lot of shows about that. What would Prop 3 do around groundwater? Because this is, I mean, SGMA, this is going to be a long-term project to figure out who has to actually pay for the water.
Yeah.
So how would this affect groundwater?
So there's quite a bit of funding for groundwater compliance with SGMA. One of the really important elements of that legislation is that it requires that groundwater-dependent species, and they include oak trees and quite a few other parts of our natural ecosystem, that they are not adversely impacted by the way the groundwater is extracted from the system. So the fact that this measure is putting money towards groundwater is very, very important.
And again, I'm sure Kyle, obviously the Sierra Club cares about groundwater, but your arguments are about how the money is distributed and the oversight. Before we go to break, Angela, what about Kyle's concern? He said that there's really no oversight when it comes to distributing almost $8.9 billion for Prop 3?
Well, we're putting the oversight in the hands of the state agencies, which will be dispersing the funds. And then if they do not act in a way that's deemed appropriate, the legislature can ask for an audit.
And who will determine whether or not it's appropriate?
Well, if the legislature sees any type of red flag, then they can ask for an audit.
Okay, what about that, Kyle? Just quickly before we go to break, about a minute.
The legislature can ask for an audit, but they do not have regular year-to-year oversight through the budget process like many other bonds go through, and they cannot modify the provisions of the bond because it was put on the ballot this way and because it was continuously appropriated. So while they can call in an audit and figure out what's wrong if something is going wrong, they have no power to change any of that, and that's a real problem.
All right. Well, I will ask Angela to comment on that right after a break. That is Kyle Jones. He's policy advocate for the Sierra Club California. They oppose Proposition 3, an $8.9 billion water bond measure. They say that it gives too much money to corporate interests like corporate big ag and doesn't have any oversight. We're also joined by Angela Mosco, Oaks Information Manager at the California Wildlife Foundation. They support Proposition 3, saying that it will restore wildlife habitats. We're also joined by Dan Moraine, a columnist with Cal Matters, a nonprofit journalism venture. And Dan has written, one of the only journalists really that's written an in-depth piece about this, what an $8.9 billion water bond would buy. This is Your Call's election special, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. It is our election special every Wednesday through Election Day on November 6th. We will host a special second hour of Your Call at 11 a.m., focusing on what's on the ballot, the races, the propositions, the regional measures. Today, we're talking about Proposition 3, an $8.9 billion water bond measure. It's called the California Water Infrastructure and Watershed Conservation Bond Initiative. And if you have any questions about this, it's not getting that much attention, and that is one reason why we wanted to talk about it today. We'll be talking about it for about 10 more minutes at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Water is such an important issue in California. We've done a lot of shows about water. And the fact is, special interests and big money really make a lot of the decisions about how water is used and distributed in this state. If you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Dan Moraine is a columnist with CalMatters. He wrote a piece about Prop 3 and what it would buy. We're also joined by Angela Mosco. She's Oaks Information Manager at the California Wildlife Foundation. They support Prop 3, saying it promises to restore wildlife habitats. Kyle Jones is policy advocate for the Sierra Club California. They oppose Prop 3, saying it will be used to possibly fund dam projects and will give too much money away to corporate interests. Before the break, we were talking about, you know, you said, Angela, that the legislature, if they feel like state departments are not spending the money wisely, they can step in. Kyle says, yes, an audit can be done, but they don't have the power to change anything. So where do we stand on that?
I mean, so it's really up to the voters. Are the elements of this measure elements that you think are a good investment or not? When I was reading the legislative analyst's report about this particular measure, I was struck by a figure of $25 billion a year that's spent on water infrastructure in California. So it's a big ticket item. So,
well, Dan, I mean, what does happen if a department is not spending money wisely? And let's say a politician says, nope, we're not doing that. We've got to change things. Does the politician have the power to do that and step in?
Well, sure. The legislature's got a lot of authority to direct an audit even after a measure is proposed. But, you know, the reality is that this is an initiative that would earmark, you know, almost $9 billion over a 3-4 year period. And that money is going to be spent unless there's a some future initiative that would repeal this, which I can't imagine would really happen. So sure, if the money is being, you know, wildly misspent, not spent for its intended purpose, then the legislature has a lot of power. You can't undo an initiative by statute. However, the only way you could undo this would be via another initiative.
Well, what about the other bonds that have already passed? What have that money? This is massive money. $4 billion state bond in June, and then a $7 billion water bond that passed in 2014. Kyle, what are your thoughts about how that money has spent, and where are we with those bonds?
So I don't know the status of every program, but I can speak to a lot of Proposition 1 because the funds were not earmarked like this one. They were not continuously appropriated, so that every year the agencies, through the governor, had to request funds from that bond to get to specific programs. That would then trigger that would be part of the budget process, in which there was an open public hearing in which the agency had to explain what they were planning on doing with that money. That was open to public comment, and the legislature had to take an affirmative vote before that got spent. With regards to Proposition 68, because of the close work between the legislature and the governor's office putting it on the ballot, many of those hearings were held this year to have that open debate about where that money should go, and so that money's already going out the door. The continuous appropriation in Proposition 3 removes this whole process from the equation.
Angela?
In our view, it gets the money to the ground faster.
You know, may I just add,
Dan,
the water bond, the $7 billion water bond that we all voted on, this was Governor Brown's proposal. You know, it was just a few months ago that a commission called the State Water Commission earmarked almost $3 billion, right? So this was approved years ago. It took 3-4 years before the commission came up with how to spend a portion of this bond as it relates to reservoirs. And so So yeah, it's a very different process than what is envisioned by Proposition 3. You know, one of the interesting questions here is where Governor Brown is going to stand on this. He has not, as near as I can tell, taken a position one way or the other on Proposition 3. Now, he and Jerry Merrill go back a long time. They were Jerry Merrill was in the first Governor Brown's administration. He was in this administration early in Governor Brown's tenure in 2011. So they've got a long history, and I do believe you could count them as friends. It's not, however, clear to me that Governor Brown is going to endorse this, and what he says on something like this will matter.
Kyle, I wanted to ask you again, you're with the Sierra Club, and the Sierra Club opposes Prop 3. As you said, there's so many good things in this measure. Wetlands restoration, drinking water for low-income communities. The Sacramento Bee ran a piece in June, and it found that 360,000 Californians cannot drink their water. And at this point, there's no fix. I mean, in this wealthy state, as this editorial says, that is a disgrace. So how do you propose we tackle these very important issues if you don't support Prop 3?
Well, there's always the opportunity of working collaboratively with the legislature to pull together another bond that could be better targeted towards actually addressing these issues that we don't have other sources of funding, like drinking water. And you know, that was a component of Prop 1, that was a component of Prop 68. And I think that's something the legislature is very interested in. There's been a continuing policy push to develop a long-term funding solution. And that's because while bonds can pay for, say, new treatment plants to treat some of the water contamination issues, what they can't pay for is the ongoing operations and maintenance. And so a big problem that you have in disadvantaged communities without access to drinking water is that we can build them treatment plants, but their bills become so unaffordable that we have to shutter those plants. And that's happened numerous times. And so there was a large effort to push a drinking water fund this year. I'm sure it will get picked back up again. And so there is other ways to get to those solutions that can be done without paying for things that we have other that those interests can already pay for.
Angela,
that this bond provides.
What about that argument?
Well, in our view, we're not seeing there are too many ornaments on this Christmas tree. The funding is going towards real needs. Yes, the Kern-Fryant Canal is being funded, but there's also funding for the restoration of the San Joaquin River. Unfortunately, with climate change, the impacts are not evenly distributed, and we have people who don't have good drinking water now. And if this is passed, the money will get to the ground pretty quickly. So,
Well, in our remaining minutes, Dan, is there anything else voters need to know about Proposition 3?
Well, you know, as it relates to clean water, I spent a lot of time in the Capitol, this past month in August, the legislature had a piece of legislation that sought to raise a tax. You know, minor. It was not going to be very much. It would have appeared on everybody's water bill, however, and the legislature couldn't reach 2/3 majority to approve this. Well, this initiative, as Angela points out, would, and I think Kyle as well, this would provide money for cleaning up drinking water. And it really is, you know, kind of appalling when you go to West Fresno and Porterville and these small towns, and not just there. I mean, in the San Gabriel Valley water is fouled, from our from industry, from agriculture, naturally occurring arsenic and such. So this is a big problem, and just imagine if you can't turn on your water and your kid can't drink clean water. I mean, it's, it, it is certainly an issue that Californians ought to care about.
Yes, definitely, and we will do a show about that. Angela, you're with the California Wildlife Foundation. Final thoughts about why you all support Proposition 3.
We have so much work to do. I've walked on the dry riverbed of the San Joaquin River. Our water system needs attention, and we are in support of this bill because it has recognition that our water system relies on a healthy watershed. My late father-in-law said something in a slightly different way: if the fish can't procreate in it, you can't drink it. And I feel like this bond measure recognizes the interconnection between our natural infrastructure and our water infrastructure. And we need to put money to the ground in California. Our natural infrastructure is a net emitter at this point. It's been for a number of years because our fires are out of control because of 100 years of fire suppression, climate change, pests, you name it, invasive species. We have a lot of work to do. And my hat's off to Jerry Merrill for bringing the different parties together to hammer this out. And whether people vote for this or not, we all need to show up on election day and cast our ballots. There's a lot on our shoulders, and our organization encourages folks to vote for this measure.
Angela Mosco is Oaks Information Manager at the California Wildlife Foundation. They support Proposition 3. Kyle Jones is with the Sierra Club. Kyle, final thoughts on why the Sierra Club opposes Prop 3.
Yeah, I would say, again, Angela's right. There's a lot of need out there. But ultimately, we shouldn't let some interests use that need in order to enrich themselves by using the taxpayers. If what we should do instead is come back, scrap this, work collaboratively to find a way to fund these measures that truly need funding, and leave the pork aside. We have limited resources and a lot to do. We should make sure that those resources are targeted towards the funds that need help: groundwater sustainability, drinking water, environmental restoration, and not these items that have other people who can pay for them, who should be paying for them. And then we should also make sure that a bond is written publicly, openly, with debate and public hearings. And that there's not that the language on it's tight, that we don't have these loopholes in there or potential worries that we have, but because the language isn't the language of the bond isn't tight enough, that environmentally damaging projects can move forward with this money. And so we urge a no vote on Prop 3, and that we do, we work together to do it right.
Kyle Jones is policy advocate with the Sierra Club California. They oppose Proposition 3. And Dan Moraine is a columnist with Cal Matters, and he has written about Prop 3. You can find his piece at yourcallradio.org. Dan, Kyle, and Angela, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And again, Proposition 3 is an $8.9 billion water bond measure, and you can find more information on it at yourcallradio.org. It's called the California Water Infrastructure and Watershed Conservation Bond Initiative. This is not really getting much attention, and that's why we decided to focus on it. And coming up next, we are going to be speaking with Melissa Breach, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of California, a nonpartisan political organization that works to inform the public about major public policy issues and influences public policy through education and advocacy. Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Well, we've got a big election coming up. First off, what is the status of voting in California in terms of machines and ballots? Where are we on that issue?
I'm not sure I fully understand your question.
Well,
are you asking if we've purchased new voting equipment?
No, but there's problems with voting machines and ballots, and sometimes people go to the wrong place or they're not on the list. I mean, are there any problems that we should know about now before Election Day?
Well, so California is a massive state, and we can always assume that there are going to be some glitches throughout the course of something like an election. And there are ongoing issues around, like, properly funding our local election departments and securing new voting equipment. But I think what I would want voters and voters in San Francisco to know is that they can rely on the fact that when they vote, assuming that they're eligible eligible to vote, their vote is counted, and that it's counted correctly. The big issues, I think, are what happens if you show up and you thought you had registered but you hadn't, or you definitely had registered but for some reason you're not on the polls. And I think there what we want to say is, if you're not on the polls at your polling place but you're in the correct county, you definitely want to vote, and you want to vote. We call it provisional voting. But the only thing it's provisional of is that the county registrar will ensure that you are eligible to vote before they actually count your ballot. But you should absolutely vote that way. Those votes are counted. And then, in fact, you'll get a little tag that you can tear off with the phone number so that you can call up afterwards and confirm that your ballot was counted. And if it wasn't counted, why?
And where can people go today to make sure that if they still vote offline, if they don't get a ballot in the mail, because a lot of people still go to a polling place.
Yep.
What can they do today to make sure that they're going to be on the list and to find out where their polling place is?
So I think that everyone should consider checking their registration, and you can do that at registertovote.ca.gov. You could also go to our site, which is votersedge.org, and go to the voter information section, and we can kind of walk you through all of this. But you can go, you can check, you can confirm that you're registered, you can confirm that you are registered at your correct address. It's also a chance to double check, do you want to be registered as a vote-by-mail voter? You can still do that. Has your last name changed because you got married or divorced? Anything that could kind of require that you resubmit or correct your registration. And to be clear, you have plenty of time. You can register to vote or change your registration up until Monday, October 22nd. You can register online, or you can even just have your paper registration postmarked by the 22nd.
Okay.
And you'll be good. Now, if you want to change your status to vote by mail, you actually have longer to do that. I believe in this election, you have until October 30th.
Okay. And we just had a caller who couldn't stay on the line and wanted to say that more than half of provisional ballots are not counted. Is that right?
Well, I can't speak to the number of provisional ballots that are or not counted. That's something we could look into for you. It seems a little high. What
yeah.
I can assure you of is that the only reason that a provisional ballot would not be counted is because the person voting it was ineligible, meaning they weren't eligible to vote, or because they voted in the wrong county.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to look this up. I did find one piece from NBC that found provisional ballots printing glitch left about 120,000 LA County voters off of the list. There was a lot of problems.
Well, so that was a ballot. I want to clarify that. It wasn't
yeah.
a provisional ballot. As a matter of fact, if people voted provisionally there, their votes would have been counted, I believe.
Right.
It was a glitch in the printing of the poll book, and it's in my opinion, a fairly significant error.
And what can we do to make sure those errors don't happen? I mean, as you said, California is a massive state, but what's being done now to try to limit these kinds of errors?
So I think that that work is really done at the county level, at the county registrar's office. I think obviously looking at LA, people are being very careful about their poll book printing. They're doing a lot of double checking. They're being quite cautious. But what I guess I want to say about this is that it's absolutely appropriate for the public to ask questions when these kind of errors happen and to demand that these kind of errors don't happen routinely and are corrected. But the larger issue is not to interpret these errors, if they happen, as an inability for you to cast your ballot in an immediate sense.
A MapLight and the League of Women Voters of California have created the Voters Edge California website. It's a very comprehensive source of online voting information. Tell us about what voters can find there and the tools they can use to learn more about what's on the ballot.
Sure. So if you go in and you put your actual address, you will get a reflection of your entire ballot, and that's from the U.S. Senate race all the way down in San Francisco to, trying to think. I think you have some BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit races, and then you have several, maybe five or six local propositions. So you'll see the entire ballot. You'll be able to learn about those candidates, both in terms of publicly sourced information, also information that they themselves provide. For state-level candidates and races, ballot measures, you'll be able to see some campaign finance data, some transparency around that. You'll be able to see who is endorsing these candidates. And then you'll be able to go through and you'll be able to actually mark, you'll be able to select these candidates. And in that way, you can kind of go through and pre-prep your ballot and then print it or save it to your phone and take it with you into the polling place. Or if you're voting by mail, just kind of what I do is I sit with it while I fill out my vote by mail ballot. And you can also find contact information for the candidates, and then you can find voting information. You can look up your polling place. You can find contact information for your registrar. You can find a listing of deadlines and ways that you can vote, and also your rights as a voter, your specific rights as a voter.
I mean, this is fantastic. California, gosh, we've got 12 propositions in the November ballot. We've been doing this election series, and I just realized we've been kind of looking at the different things on the ballot, but I haven't actually looked at the entire thing, and once again, it is incredibly long.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot that we're voting on. Judges, Board of Education, a lot of different things. So there's a lot of homework to be done here.
There is. And one of the things that I will say is that Californians historically have really liked their direct democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get a disproportionately high number of ballot measures. And I think that Californians do really good with them, but they're also a significant demand on voters.
It is.
Even for,
it is. And I mean, it's such a tough one because people are frustrated that there's so much money is being spent. But at the same time, If you vote, I mean, you can really change things. There's some really important measures on this ballot. We just talked about Prop 3, which is a water bond. And then last week we talked about Prop 10, which would repeal Costa-Hawkins, which would allow local governments to once again implement rent control. I mean, there's just so many important things on this ballot.
I think that's right. And I think for people who feel maybe disconnected from the democratic process and like maybe they don't have a, there's nothing there that they're really excited about. It's often because they're looking really at the top of the ticket. And so really what we want to say is there's a ton of stuff to vote on at the state and local level. And those local elections are really, really critical. And I always want to remind voters, you know, you don't have to vote the whole ballot. If you go in to vote and there's a few things that you don't feel comfortable voting on, you don't have to do that. You can vote on the things that you choose to. And your vote will be fully counted. And I should also mention that we're actually only at 11 state ballot measures, and that's because one of them, Proposition 9, was pulled off the ballot because of a lawsuit.
Hmm. Well, you all did an amazing job. I mean, it's so easy to read this. If you vote yes, this is what happens. If you vote no, who gave the money? Prop 10, for example, the yes side, $13 million, the no side, $48
million. Yeah.
I mean, this is huge. And then you have this nice list of the funders. So, wow. Melissa, thank you so much because you make our lives easier. Thank you for putting this together and thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. And we're really excited to see broad turnout. So I hope everybody in San Francisco turns out, and we see another record-breaking election in this midterm.
Yes, we hope so. Melissa Breach, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of California, thank you so much.